We are going to be going through Exodus, the 16th chapter, and we are going to be going through it to the end of the chapter. Now, technically today, all right, according to the calendar, it really is the 15th day, all right? We're going to cover 15th and the 22nd day today completely, but subject matter is going to be about the manna. Next week, although it should be on this subject matter, we're going to be going through the seventh counting of the Sabbath. It's a very long explanation. It covers the 17th chapter and the 18th chapter. It's relatively long, so you're going to have at least two more messages. I'll start next week concerning maybe three messages. Concerning the events that led them up to Mount Sinai. Something very drastically took place, and it's not just a happenstance in history. As I've been trying very hard, I hope you have been able to follow through with what I've been trying to say, is that we go through each one of these Shemots, and we see a story, something, event, that we, instead of just reading it and assuming that it really belongs to another group of people that lived thousands of years ago and only to the Jewish people of today, the truth is, I hope I've been able to kind of zero in and making this particular adventure to the 10. I want to make it very personal with you, that you can kind of make connection. Because these things, what happens, what has happened, what he says, what God has says, is there for our admonition and for our understanding and for our correction. So I want to verify that one more time because it's very, very important. And so we will continue on now. We're going to backtrack a little bit in Exodus, the 16th chapter. We're going to start in verse 14 and finish to the end of the chapter.
And when the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a small round substance as fine as frost on the ground. So when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "This is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. This is the thing which the Lord has commanded. Let every man gather it according to each one's need. One omer for each person according to the number of persons. Let every man take for those who are in his tent." Then the children of Israel did so and gathered, some more, some less. So when they measured it by omers, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who gathered little had no lack. Every man had gathered according to each one's need. And Moses said, "Let no one leave any of it till morning." Notwithstanding, they did not heed Moses. But some of them left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. So they gathered it every morning, every man according to his need, and when the sun became hot, it melted. And so it was on the sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. Then he said to them, "This is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning." So they laid it up till morning, and Moses commanded, and it did not stink, nor were there any worms in it. Then Moses said, "Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be none." Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for the Lord has given you the Sabbath, therefore he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Let every man remain in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day, and the house of Israel called its name Manna. And it was like white coriander seed, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. Then Moses said, "This is a thing which the Lord has commanded. Fill an omer with it, to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness, when I brought you out of the land of Egypt." And Moses said to Aaron, "Take a pot and put an omer of manna in it, and lay it up before the Lord, to keep it, to be kept for your generations." As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron laid up before the testimony to be kept. And the children of Israel ate manna 40 years until they came to an uninhabited land. They ate manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is 1/10 of an ephah.
Any thoughts? Questions? If you speak a little louder.
My first thought was 40 years is a really long time to eat one food.
Yeah, that touches on something you had said last week, that the fact that God had to give them the manna was not really a blessing, that it was something of a torment. So I'm not a person that can eat the same thing every day, so eating the same thing every day for 40 years certainly would not feel like a blessing.
You remember, what not meant for 40 years. They're supposed to give the plan of the promise within 2 years, or basically in the beginning of the third year, or in the process of the third year.
I don't know if you guys were around when Keith Green was here, and that was back in the late 70s, early 80s, but he had a song, So You Want to Go Back to Egypt. And one of the lines in there was, or at the end of, banana bread, manna burgers, flaming manna souffle. Anyhow, it was kind of a play on things, but he was talking about how the children of Israel complained about all their things that they had to make with manna.
I was just going to ask, maybe you're going to get to it later. So if they were supposed to enter in after 2 years, why did it take them another 38 years?
Well, we'll get there. That's another journey.
We'll
have to get the journey of the 10 first. Look, Exodus tells us tremendous amount of things on how God thinks and how God acts and how God is going to institute His will. All right? We sometimes pay too much attention to the people and don't listen to what is written, what comes out of the mouth of Moses, what comes out of the mouth of Aaron, and what comes out of the mouth of the Creator Himself.
What is the testimony?
What?
The testimony. It says they laid it before the testimony.
We'll talk about that. That's the inserted part. I mean, that's not chronological order here. They didn't have the testimony yet. It didn't happen until the second year. Actually, within the first year, I think, like, more than likely. Well, I won't go into the date. I'll give you the timing of that according to what I understand. It's fascinating on the events of the days as we keep on going all the way until before they rejected going into the promised land. I told you last week they were in the wilderness of Sin. What does the word Sin mean? You forgot.
Thorn.
Very important that we understand he led them into the, quote, wilderness of thorn, end of quote. And then he's going to lead them into a mountain. What was the name of the mountain? Sinai. Or we call it Mount Sinai. And that means, in Hebrew, what?
Thorny.
All right. Now, are those just words that just happen to be named that? Or were they named because of a reason? Nothing in the Bible is just happenstance to be named something that is casually being understood. I don't have full understanding of all the names. Don't get me wrong. I don't have a full picture of everything yet. But I find it very fascinating when I find out the names of these things. And it tells us the actions of God, not the actions of the people. All right? And so we have this called, what do they call it, the manna week? Or the 2 weeks of manna, I guess. Okay? On the 15th day of the second month, this is part of my notes now, and you will receive the complete thing of the notes after I finished it. The reason why I'm not going to let you see it in advance is because you'll try to run ahead. We're supposed to be going on a journey, all right? And if we don't go on the journey, we'll just assume, okay, let's get to the point. Now, I'm Richard. I have a hard time getting to the point. All right. Okay, the seventh. What's the seventh mean? Seventh encampment since they left Egypt. All right. And I call the fourth one. This is the fourth what? Encampment after the days of unleavened bread. All right? Fourth encampment after the days of unleavened bread. As we go through and we read these things, we go through Passover, we go through days of unleavened bread, and then we want to hurry up and get to some place. However, before we can get there, we had to find out what is it that God was in the process of showing them and teaching them that we ourselves should do something about it. Learn and listen and pay attention to, in a sense, the details.
Isn't that the fourth in parentheses? Isn't that the fourth Shabbat of the counting
of
the...
No, it's not the fourth of the Shabbat. We're going to count. We will get there, but don't jump the gun before we're there. I understand what you're saying, the fourth of Shabbat. We'll get in there, but we had to find out what took place here. Okay? It's very important. You know, it's number seven. And having the 15th day, seven is a very important number to God. On the seventh encampment, what did he teach them? What day the Shabbat is. All right? So it's not an arbitrary thing that we can kind of ignore 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10. We have to say, what happened on the seventh encampment when they left Egypt? Because God doesn't throw one stone and hit one target. When he throws a stone, it's going to bounce all the way to hit where he wants to hit in more than one place. All right? So what was... They got the men because of what? Murmuring for 6 days. All right? What was the first murmuring? The water, bitter water. So this is the second murmuring. Then, of course, they had quail do the murmuring. Then in one omer of manna per person at morning per day, counted of the omer, which is a red herring. I'll try to explain that today, because basically I want you to go back a little bit. Remember what happened on the first day of unleavened bread? What did God have Moses do? You forgot.
What's the parting of the Red Sea?
What? Louder?
Sanctify the firstborn.
Now, see, we casually forget this. Right? We casually forget this because we don't quite get the picture of what the firstborn is all about. What time of year did this take place?
Spring.
What was the main crop at that time of year?
Barley.
Barley. They're bringing in the harvest. All right? Amongst those harvests are certain primary people who are what's called the firstborn. What's important about the firstborn? What's the function of the firstborn? What's the job of the firstborn? What's the firstborn supposed to do?
See the double portion.
He is to be the leadership of all of his brothers, rest of his brothers and the rest of his sisters. He's supposed to be responsible. He has to supposed to take on the responsibility of the family. When dad dies, who takes over? The oldest son. That's his job. That's his function. All right? They have to do this. That's the law. What takes place. Now, we went through it. I told you what we had this, the wave sheaf offering. Remember the wave sheaf offering? What does it say in Leviticus? When you do something to the harvest, you bring something in. And there's the first of the harvest, the first of the harvest, right? And then you bring in the rest of the harvest. Okay? Now, when we start talking about counting of the Omer, what is the Omer all about? Is it about manna? What's it about? The bringing in a harvest. Now remember, as we head toward the 50th day, this is increasing day by day by day by day. It increases. Not the manna. All right? The harvest is being brought in more and more and more. Do you harvest only one day? Perhaps some of you do. God harvests for 50 days. And that He is the one who is counting the Omer. Omer is you. You are the Omer. And you are being counted. Understand that? I've said that before. Get back to the point where we're at now. So when I said it's a red herring for us to say, let's count the Omer, that's not the purpose of the counting of the Omer. The purpose of the counting of the Omer is God is doing the counting. Manna has nothing to do with counting the Omer. But the wheat has, the barley has the purpose of the Omer. Yes?
Doesn't He command us, though, to count the Omer?
It is God counting the Omer. What I'm trying to say, we can go and count the Omer, but if we don't understand, it's God doing it instead of us. We're not the ones that are counting and bringing in anything. He's bringing in the whole crop.
Yeah, okay.
All right. The leadership is to do a job in that function. What's the leadership supposed to do? Supposed to be out in the field working like a dog, I guess. You are not in the field. You're not out there working. Somebody else brought you in. Who brought you in? The firstborn. The firstborn brought you in. All right? So, we get a picture here. When Jesus said, pray that He brings more laborers for the harvest, that particular statement has everything to do with Shavuot. When we reach Shavuot, I hope you'll be able to see this picture as clear as mud. It's a major crop, a major harvest, and it's a big one, very, very large. So on the first day, 15th day of the first month, there was this being sanctify the firstborn. And it's very, very important that you keep that in mind. Yes?
This made me think that the firstborn brought us in, the part you said the firstborn brought us in. And He's counting us from Passover.
That's His job.
Right. And so the counting of the Omer that happens between Passover until the Feast of Weeks, which is Pentecost.
It keeps on going.
Oh, it continues. But it made me think of the, in Psalms, you know, His rod and His staff, they comfort me.
Yes.
And the sheep going under the rod, and He's counting us as we're coming in.
Whoop, I'm sorry.
And He's totally under control of who's coming in and in what order.
That's another analogy, which
but
I know.
Kind of the same thing, huh?
But I want to, because the Holy Days is centered around what? Harvest, what comes up from the ground. The first harvest is what comes up from the ground. Second harvest comes up from the ground. The third harvest is what? That which comes up from the ground. And guess what? You got wine and apples and everything else, all the fruit, the land, the trees. You bring them in, and you're supposed to bring certain tree types into the feast. And it has a picture of people, not of things, people. I've been explained before. I'm not going to go into detail there. Now we are to bring in and sacrifice, or actually take what's called an offering. And it has to do with animals. We're not going to get there today, because I'm just talking today about what's going on. To explain that they didn't just eat manna, they actually ate other things as well. They actually had cattle they ate. We will get to numbers. You'll see they consumed tremendous amount of cattle, tremendous amount. We won't get there today. That's in the book of Numbers. And a very, very important event that takes place in the book of Numbers to explain. So they didn't just eat manna. They actually ate manna and other things. Where was I before? Second month. I was going to second month, wasn't I? Need to move this forward. Yeah. So here we are now. We'll talk about both the 15th and the 22nd because I have next 2 weeks is going to be very laborious, but very, very important for us to see a picture. It's what the people said and what God did that we need to see and say, oh, this is the hand of the Creator, isn't it? Yeah. A very, very important message when we reach there. Now, with my notes. I want to go. Verse 15 of Exodus 16:15. Moses said unto them, this is the bread which Yahuwah has given to you to eat. Now the word bread is really the word we think of, lachem. Now, and don't think it's really the kind of bread you kind of put stuff on and eat. The bread is a word meaning, and like when they break bread, they didn't just break bread and eat it. They had an entire meal. And so this is basically the bread is referring. Yes, you're going to take bread, and you're going to have other things you eat with it. Now, every single Shabbat, there's something I stand up and I hold this the loaf of bread up there, right? How many of you know what I say in Hebrew? I want to make sure you get the right words. I say, Baruch Atah Avinu Eloheinu. I stop. Bring forth the bread of the earth. Who is the bread? What is the bread? You are to be the bread of the earth as much as you are to be the light unto the world, as much as you are to be the salt of the earth, as much as everything this has to do with lachem of the earth. You're lifting up your people of God unto the Creator, and you're thanking Him for giving holy people unto the earth. Because when the righteous are all dead, what happens? Evil beyond evil. Remember the story of Abraham? And you remember that? Okay, he went through, how far did he go down? 10. So God said, I will not destroy it for the sake of them. And then he left. It goes below that. He's gone. He's going to destroy it. But what did he do? He went in and picked out one man and said, get out of town. Yeah, one man had a hard time wanting to leave, but he left. All right, lost his wife, lost the rest of his children. All he had is two daughters with him. And he's called a righteous man. So it was kind of scary, wasn't it? Pretty thin pickings. So even though there is less than 10, God will deliver the less than 10 out of what he is going to do to destroy the people. All right.
That, you know, when you were talking about, you know, when most of us pray over our meals, we'll say variations on the Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who gives forth the bread of the earth. We usually also will pray something, you know, Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who gives us the, you know, the grapes, the vine.
Yeah.
For 40 years, or at least up to this point, it might have, you know, God's original idea was two or three. But nonetheless, during that time, whether you're thinking of it's only 2 or 3 years or 40 years, either way, for that time period, they had access to neither, really. They did not have any bread. They couldn't grow any crops.
That's right. They had no grain. They had no wheat. Yeah, I was going to bring that out, but you brought it out. That's great. Did you understand? It's all they had was the manna.
And the meat.
And the meat. And they complained about water once in a while. We'll get there later.
Low-carb diet.
But... And so we're looking at these things. We're saying, okay, let's get a picture. All right, now, hopefully that we can kind of have... I want to drop down now to verse 20. Notwithstanding, they shamad lo. They lo shema. They did not shema. They did not hear Moses. They did not pay attention to Moses. They heard. All right, let's put in our English understanding. You may hear something, and you may respond to it, or you may hear something and not respond to it. I'll put it in English. Listen to what I am saying to you. Oh, that's a different word in English, isn't it? Oh, you really got to pay attention. Cancel your mind out. Don't think about anything else. Just listen to what I am saying, and I want you to respond and do what I am telling you, and I want you to listen. Okay? And that's, in its nutshell, is a meaning of Shema. Not just said, oh yeah, I'm hearing this, who cares? No, you gotta hear, pay attention, listen. And when you get to the Mount Sinai, you're gonna find out how He, Creator of heaven and earth, got their attention and their mind was not on anything else. And we have to learn from that. Now Moses was wrath with them. Why? Why wasn't he not gentle and great understanding, have compassion like a good Christian minister should be having to his flock and congregation? Speak gently? No, you know, he wasn't gentle, was he? Why was he angry? Why was he wroth? Well, they didn't listen and respond. They heard and ignored it as if he, Moses, hadn't had the slightest idea what he's talking about. And who cares if Moses says anything anyway? Now, what did Jesus say? Go ahead, make a comment.
No, it says some did not listen, so it wasn't the whole congregation.
Right. Okay, basically, yeah. Leadership. Basically, leadership's come and complaining.
Yeah.
Not the whole congregation. They can't come. But they're mouthing what the people are saying too. All right. So when we say we've got a coming scene here now. You remember the quote parable about Lazarus and Abraham, or the rich man and Abraham, whatever. And he says, you know, if someone comes up from the dead, they'll surely listen. And he says, no, you had Moses. If you didn't listen to Moses, someone coming back from the dead, including the Messiah himself, will have no bearing on your world. Wow. That's why Revelation says toward the very end in the last final days of the pouring of the the bowls, right? The Omar. Okay. I'm using that word now. And he said the song of and then the
Song of the Lamb.
You got to listen to Moses first. Everybody thinks, oh no, I'll listen to Moses after I listen to the Song of the Lamb. That's not what it says. This is the reason why I spend so much time and hoping that we can, in our brain, register that we don't just picture Moses as some ancient of day that doesn't mean anything. His name is mentioned from the book of Exodus all the way to Revelations. The man is very important to listen to. Why? Oh, he's just an old man. Yeah, okay. Forget about old men. Let's go on with the younger men who are wiser, more smart. All right, now, it's very fascinating here. He was only having them take what they are supposed to take. And what did some of them do? Remember? What happened? All right, this is very funny. Let's just stop and think about how this is the Creator doing it. It's not how food decomposes or rots. This came from, it did not come from the ground, did it? It came from above. How long did it last? They were to have it in the morning. By noon, it melted. If you try to hide it, worms came in. God sent us a bunch of them, a bunch of food where worms get in there and eat up the food. Yeah. Manna is not something you can keep. Manna is not something you're supposed to preserve. Manna was not something that you had to have. It was something that God sent and decomposed it deliberately. Why didn't he keep it going? Yes.
So in other words, there was no manna kimchi then.
We also know that the only time it did not rot. Now listen very carefully to Scripture. Okay. Remember, when it reached high noon, what happened to the manna? It melted. They only got manna in the morning for breakfast. What did they eat in the afternoon? No manna. They had to eat quail. They would have had to eat something else, right? It didn't last very long. Some people have an idea that manna is something that the world has now. The world has it now. All they have to do is get it. It's there. It's out there in the world. It's planted. And God has preserved it. No, He hasn't. He's only preserved it in one spot. Where is that one spot? In the testimony. That's the only place He has preserved it. And when we, God willing, opens up that ark, He's going to show us. Did you know? You look at that stuff. That's what they lived on.
So, Richard, do you know where the ark is?
No, I do not know where the ark is. There are people who have all sorts of ideas and sketches. I'm not even going to go there. I'll present to you an idea after these days are finished. But that's just an idea. Yes.
What about you can't say it preserved, but then Friday night or Friday morning, they would get enough for Sabbath and for...
Right. They could not eat it in the afternoon.
No, but...
Only the morning stuff. What was left over, that is the two bowls, take one of the bowls and you store it.
So it
in the refrigerator?
It didn't melt, so...
It didn't melt.
It had to go somewhere in order to...
So what does that tell you about God?
God's power. Okay.
All right. Yes.
Where does it say they had to eat it by noon, though? I can't say I've read
that. It says it melted.
Yeah, that's if they didn't collect it by noon.
No, you eat it in the morning. Okay. You collect it in the morning. It comes at night. It's the book of Numbers says the manna came at night.
Sure.
And they were to pick it up in the morning. By the heat of the sun, it melted. Now, the heat of the sun is always 12 or thereafter. That means the peak of the heat of the day. All right? Well, that day, they could eat it in the morning. I mean, some people like boiled food in the morning for breakfast. Some people like baked food in the morning for breakfast. Some people like, well, they didn't have barbecue. You don't barbecue this stuff. Now, what did it taste like? Oh, go ahead.
Is it right to say that all of the things that were in the Ark of the Covenant were representations of Yeshua? Because there's the testimony. You've got the Ten Commandments, which he is the living Torah, and then you've got the manna. He is the bread.
Yeah, my dear, and we haven't reached that far yet. Yes, your answer is yes, but I can't go into explanation of where how that all pictures. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Again, that's very very true. It was Aaron's rod that was in there, not Moses' rod.
Right.
Not his staff. His rod. In Hebrew, you know there's two different points of view. You got to know the difference between those two. That staff, by the way, that rod, rather. Well, we're not there discussing the size of the ark, but you know the ark wasn't 40 feet long or even 6 feet high. It was really kind of small. That staff wasn't very big. It was small. Probably a whole lot smaller than this stick. It probably maybe be only maybe 2 feet, maybe. No, this is three, probably only 2 feet long. Yeah. What was the rod for? Jabbing, eating, spanking. What was the shaft for? To pull them, to lead them, to guide the sheep. You put that, a hook is the other way. See, we think of the hook, old men with a hook on it. No, the shaft, shepherds didn't use it. It was the other way around. The hook was the bottom. And they bring the lead sheep. Either that thing around the sheep's neck or around its feet. Go this way. Go pull, leading, because that's what the lamed represents. The leadership, leading. All right. We're going back on history. I don't want to go too far back in history. In verse 23, this is Moses talking. He said to them, Yahuwah has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto Yahuwah. Bake that which you will bake today. And that Hebrew word can mean boil, also can mean roast, or can be just mean cook. What you're going to cook or roast or boil today, and that which remains over, lay it up for you and keep it until the morning, not the rest of the day. So Erev Shabbat, you stashed it. And then when you come in to Erev morning, Shabbat morning, what's that word, bo? Okay. Oh. You come in and the manna was in the morning, but not for the whole day. Just the manna now. Don't get confused with the other food they ate. Remember, they had no grain. They consumed the grain. They consumed all the barley that they had. It was all over with. And they can't plant it because they're on the move, right? And now, this is very interesting. Now, no worms came up, and it didn't stink. This manna, this food, was not something one could have in storage. It's not something that one could last until, you know, they need it. Only on the sixth day did it remain. It could not be stored at all during the night. An awful lot of people, Miss Richard speaking to you right now, an awful lot of people have an idea that manna is still around here on the face of the earth. I'm looking at what is being read. I'm accepting what's being read. It didn't last. The last day they got their manna was when they entered into the promised land. That was in, but it ceased being. What did Jesus say when they ate manna in the wilderness? What did he tell his disciples? Or maybe the apostles. They all died. That manna was not sustaining them. That manna was not keeping them alive. Wait a minute. Yes, it did. Manna is supposed to represent the Messiah. No, manna represents something which is in that ark. The true bread that keeps you alive. Where did that true bread come from? Come from down to us today. It's a direct parallel. But guess what? You are going to have to continue on consuming, quote, the Word of the living God every single day, every single morning, and twice as much on Erev Shabbat. You see a parallel? So the physical manna didn't keep them alive. They all died. But the part that's being preserved to show us a picture that the true bread of life came down, we can live by that. We can sustain our life every day. When? Once a week? Only on the holidays? You know, Day of Atonement maybe? Or is it every day? And you have twice as much to sustain your life on the sixth day of the week. Twice as much. Very interesting, isn't it? So we're learning something here about manna. Manna, if you think you got to count the red herring, count the Omar associated with manna, it does not work. The red herring, what I'm saying is that in the Messianic world, they're counting the Omar, and they don't know what the Omar is. The Omar is them. The Omar is you. The Omar is the people of God. And if they just count a bunch of Omars, what do they do with it? Oh, I got number one, number two, number three. What do you do with it? Where do you put it? How do you store it? Where do you apply it? You understand what I'm saying? The message, which this is my personal opinion right now, is they don't get the picture because it has to do with the harvest, which was way back during the time of when they left Egypt. They are the first. The harvest is very, very important to God. He's going to send down what the angels must do first, he said. Cut the... What's supposed to cut first? The tares. And then he gets to cut the wheat. You and me. He's going to put you and me in the storehouse. What did he do with the tares? Get burned up.
I was going to say, I thought it was they cut them both down and they sort them out. Did I miss?
No. He told them, okay. Do not cut them both down.
Oh, okay.
Let them both grow together, then come and cut the tares.
Oh, that's like the wheat boughs.
Where was I at now? Oh, I got to go, another word. You got to go to the 28th chapter, 28th verse. I explained this before when we went through the book of Genesis. I explained the difference between words. And I went very specifically over the difference between words. I introduced you to a new word that was in the book of Exodus. All right, which had been translated law. And what was that word in Hebrew? Torah. Which comes from the verb yara, which means instructions, teaching, guiding, leading the pupil. All right? There's another word which I explained before. And Yahuwah said unto Moses, how long will ye to keep my commandments and my law? Now, are they the same thing? No, they are not. Commandments in Hebrew is mitzvah. It is not a teaching. Put in simple language, it's a command. He's given you a command. Wow, that's interesting. As we've gone through this 2 weeks here now, was there a law? Was there a Torah in that? Or was there a commandment in this? Well, yeah, what? It was a commandment. What was the commandment? You will only take so much per person, per family, and take it home, and you will eat it that morning. Do not keep it overnight. That's a commandment, not a law, not a Torah. And if you kept it, guess what happened? You disobeyed a commandment. You didn't disobey a Torah, because that's what he's talking about. Now, when you disobey, if you were, how many of you have been in the military? Just raise your hand. Everybody's been in the military. When you disobey a commanding officer, what does he do? Give you a big belly, a beer, and say, hey, have a good fun? Because I'm going to have it to you. No, he's not. It's not a Torah, though, is it? The commander's not giving you a Torah. He's giving you a commandment. He's giving you a mitzvah. Mitzvahs are not necessarily good deeds. Mitzvah is, this is I command, you follow it through. Wow. What if I don't like that mitzvah? This is my command, this is my mitzvah, follow through and do it. Ooh. Wait a minute. I disagree with that commandment. This is my mitzvah, go ahead and do it. If you don't, I'm going to be mad. The commander in chief is your creator of heaven and earth, isn't he? All right.
So an example of a teaching or a Torah, right, would be like, all I can really think of is like a New Testament example is when Yeshua gave, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the, you know, the poor.
That's teaching.
That's like a teaching. So
that's a teaching situation.
Like a parable or something like that.
Right. He explained the teachings that were in the law or in was in the Torah and in the prophets. He explained the teaching was all about.
So
he didn't give a command. Now, sometimes he did command.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference when he gives a command compared to giving the teaching.
Okay.
Well, every
the Torah,
teaching, right?
I
see what you're saying. But teaching is something you do. Teaching something. Well, I understand this. I'm going to go do it. That's you're within the Torah.
Yeah.
You're within.
Yeah.
We've got to be within the law. No, basically speaking, we're within the Torah.
Right.
We're doing what it's telling us to do. We're going to be heading for the Ten Commandments.
Sure.
Which is not Torah. Ten Commandments. When you get there, I have something very, very, very powerful to tell you. And some of you probably will be upset. But I'm going to tell you what it says and how it does affect when you not break a law, you break a commandment. It can bring forth death. Teaching doesn't bring forth death. Following through and living the teaching, responding to the teaching, responding and living that way, does not bring forth death. For by you will live by it. Now we have a hard time, because in commandments, we have a hard time with commandments. We really have hard times with commandments. They're more difficult. All of you could say, well, hell, I understand the teaching of the Shabbat. Wait a minute. That was a commandment. Where is it taking us? What's the purpose of Shabbat? The little Bible tells us what it is. We will not go there today. But you understand what I'm saying, I hope. Now, Yahuwah said to Moses, come unto me. This is the book of Exodus. Deuteronomy. I mean, Numbers. I'm not going to tell you where it's at. But understand something about this. Commandment and mitzvot and laws. They're totally different from one another. They're not together. They actually, one says this, that one says that. It's not the meaning one means this, and that one means that. They have two different worlds. All right? And Yahuwah said, this is the second time, first time we go to the mountain, I believe it is, maybe the second time. I haven't checked up yet. But Yahuwah said unto Moses, come up to me in the mountain, and be there. That's the commandment. And I'll give you tablets of stone and a Torah and the commandments which I have written that thou may teach Yahuwah them. We're not there in Numbers. When we get to Numbers, This is very, very important wording. Extremely important wording. All right? So I'm only using this statement so you can understand. There is something different between the two. If we can picture that in our brain, separate that in our brain, we'll have a better time, I think, understanding it. I'm not going to go through much more on this one. And like I said before, is to take a pot and put in an omer full of manna within and lay it before Yahuwah and just keep it from generation to generation, and it'll be kept in the testimony. Well, they didn't have the testimony yet. They didn't have the Ark of the Testimony. It wasn't there yet. It was not built yet. So we're talking in the future what's going to take place. They still ate manna all that time when they're there, quote, at Mount Sinai or in the Mountain of Thornies. All right. I don't know if I have anything else more to say. I want to make one more comment before I go here. I want to ask the question. Did what I say today make any sense to you? Are we learning? We're not there at the 10 yet. But if we're learning what God says, what God does, how God thinks, we can begin to have a connection. We really can have a connection, a very direct connection with the Creator of heaven and earth. All we have to do is listen to His words, understand His words, walk in His words, and we'll be in His words, then we'll be in the kingdom of God. My next book summed it better. You had a statement?
Yeah, I just had a scripture about when you were talking about His commands and stuff, and it says, you know, 1 John, the way we can be sure we know Him is if we are obeying His commands. Anyone who says, I know Him, but isn't obeying His commands is a liar, and the truth is not in him. And then he says, dear friends, I'm not writing you a new command. On the contrary, it is an old command, which you have heard from the beginning. The old command is the message which you have heard before.
Okay.
So I think that's what you're saying. We've got to get back to the foundations. We can't just go to the New Testament.
And what Jesus says, if you love me, you will what?
Keep my commandments.
Commandments. When he makes a command, if you love him, you will do it. That makes sense to you? The Greek is different wording, obviously. I'm not going to go there in the Greek. But you've got to understand the difference. Because there's also a word that has to do with law, which is not commandment in Greek. Okay. We're not there.